Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, July 3rd, 2003. Today's session is Spirituality and Parenting, presented by Peter Schmidt. The number is SCP-2003-02. Let's listen in.
This is my wife, Vicky.
We have three. Make sure
she's going to keep me honest. We have three children of our own. I can hardly remember when they were little and cuddly like some of the babies around the village now that I love to hold. 24, 26, and 29. We've also been foster parents for many, many very troubled teenage kids through the whole time we've had our own kids. So 28 years of foster care. And that worked great when the teenagers that we had in our home as foster kids were teenagers and our own kids were young, and when our own kids got older than teenage, that works fine. But the most conflicted years were when they were the same age as the foster kids. That was tough. We should have been wise enough to say, look, we need a break here and just quit for a while. That's the most important thing. It's also the case that I'm a pastor, and so in my foster agency, people always were asking me about spiritual issues. Many of my colleagues in foster care, many of the people that we work with, do so out of a faith-based commitment. That's why they are foster parents. And whether they are Protestant or Catholic or not even very active in a church, they understand it as a spiritual thing. So that's why I worked up a workshop that I presented several times, and in a minute I'm going to pass out a packet of material. And it has a date on it from one of the times I passed it out at a workshop of foster parents. I'm using some of that material. But I want to start with this, just kind of two definitions and how they relate. I think all of life is spiritual. People, human beings, are spiritual beings. That's the most significant thing about us. And life is a spiritual journey. Religion can be a good map or a bad map. Healthy religion can be a very helpful map. That's how I see it. And so when someone else comes with a different map, I don't get alarmed. I just get very curious. I get interested. What does your religion have to say about this? Tell me, teach me. Some of the foster kids we had were Buddhist. We had five little Vietnamese kids. They weren't really foster kids as an official placement, but their parents were refugees, and we worked with them, and the mother had an accident, and here we had a king-size bed, and five of them fit, all this dark hair on the pillows. It was great. And we've had two Vietnamese boys that lived with us for 4 years as foster kids, unaccompanied minors, they were called. They were Buddhist. I wish they had been better Buddhists. I wish they could have told me more about what are the insights of the Buddhist map. I care about religion, but mostly I care about the journey, and maybe that's how it works for you too. Will you take one of these? And again, you can ignore the date that's on there. By the way, we have, this is a real fast workshop, because we have chapel at 7:30, and we can't go till 7:30, or we'll all be walking in late. So we're going to probably get done at, 7:15, 7:10. Yes, I got lots more. Did all those that I passed out, have you used all those? We'll leave them on a chair in case someone else could meet you. On this little packet of information are the four questions that I was given to try to respond to when I did a workshop for foster parents. But right now what I want you to do is look at page 2. Right in the middle of the page it says Faith Shield. You see, any influence you have on anybody, your children or anybody, in the area of spirituality is very directly linked to your own spirituality. So that's the starting point. You see the 6 points on the faith shield there. And you'll see on the back a yellow sheet stapled that is a shield. And so that's the first exercise we're going to do. And that's something you might have a use for in your own church sometime. But to think about these things, about your own spiritual journey. And in one section of this faith shield, A, depict the key ingredient of your faith. What would that be? Is it church? Is it Bible? Is it a person? Is it a ritual? In section B, depict an action you once took because of your faith. And you'll see the 6 suggestions there. And when you respond to them, you can write in a word or 2 or 3, or you can draw a little picture, but it's going to be very personal. And we'll have a little chance to reflect on this and share as a group. But don't worry, no one's forced to do that. So you can put on there whatever you want to do that. And will you start with that? Rip off the yellow sheet, the very last one, and then start to fill it out, the 6 different sections about your own spiritual journey. You need your own.
I need my own.
Yeah, and there's plenty of them.
Anybody else?
Anybody else?
I need a pen. I'll go and get them.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm ready.
I need. I don't have a computer. There's a box in the dishwasher. Unburn it, Bob, for a while here.
Put out the fire, Bob.
I have a broken off pencil.
I don't think they're quite that attentive to what we're doing.
I don't think so. So we'll have a lot of light.
They'll knock it off in an hour.
Yeah. You're right. Thank you.
Yeah, I found it the easiest way too.
Hi.
Hi.
You want to pick up one of these sheets? I'll show you what we're doing. Just one. This could take a long time, but we're not going to give it any more time than just this much. And if you want to return to it and think about it more later, that's fine. You don't have to have it really completed to move on here.
Tell you what, did you tell Sylvia what we're doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, all right. She came in. Yeah.
Okay, good.
There's a quote I like to share, and it's relating to this faith shield. Do you know the answer to the completion of this sentence? The best thing a father can do for his children is?
To love their mother.
To love their mother. And the best thing a mother can do for her children is to love their father. Now, the first thing I want to say is I know many very capable single parents, and maybe there are some in the room. And so this quote is not meant to exclude anybody. And how people can raise kids when they're the only adult, my hat's off to them. Because it's hard. It's really hard, even when you have a partnership to do it. So I do not want to have any single parents that may be here thinking that I'm trying to exclude them. But if you're in a partnership raising kids, what does that quote mean? What is the wisdom of it except this? The best thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. The best thing a father or a mother can do for their children is not certainly anything that they could buy. That's far too easy and far too shallow. It doesn't work. The best thing you can do is have a home where there's stability and love for each other, where you care about each other, because that's the climate in which these young lives are growing. And just like a little plant needing adequate climate, adequate water and fertilizer and the right kind of temperature, same with the lives. So if you have a home where the adults, you know, trust each other, care about each other, affirm each other, are affectionate. If you have a home where the adults know how to forgive each other, you don't have to give a lecture on forgiveness to your kids. You probably have figured out that lecturing kids doesn't work anyhow. You know, the one thing they are very good at is ignoring what we parents say. They are outstanding at that. But they are riveted by what we do. They know what it is that we do. They pay attention to that. And so if you demonstrate in your home some of the qualities you want your kids to have, if, for instance, you don't just take your aspirin, you while they're watching, you read the label. Oh, this says you're only supposed to take 2 every 4 hours. Say that. Demonstrate how you want them to treat medication. Demonstrate how you want them to do things. And they'll pick that up. In much the same way, your own spiritual journey is going to be evident. You can't hide it, really. You can't pretend that it's different than it really is, because kids have marvelous crap detectors. You know, they know what's crap, and they just cut right through it. So that's why we start by thinking about our own spiritual journey. Where are we at? And of course, spirit means things like, what's the most important thing in life? What does life mean? What does my life mean? How do I understand pain? How do I understand the fact that I'm moving toward death? What does it mean to have wholeness? Those are all really deep, important spiritual questions. And religion often is a good map for helping us sort through questions of suffering, good and evil, the purpose of life. Hopefully that's part of your life and you have some kind of a map to work with. But your own spiritual life is your primary tool for inculcating and encouraging spiritual growth among your own family and maybe children with whom you work. Any insights or reflections on working on the shield? Did it make you in touch with anything?
Yeah, that it's a process.
Had you filled this out 10 years ago, would you maybe have different things in there?
Some.
And some of them perhaps are so important they last the whole life.
They're locked in. Yeah. Like the most important person.
Yeah. Okay. Please.
Well, I just noticed how, you know, kind of the opposites, balancing opposites, because, you know, that's like the thing I'm most certain of is God's unconditional love. And then what was the other thing? What was B?
Interferes,
yeah. And I said fear of failure. Wow. You know, I'm just looking at how the opposites, like, okay, how do I reconcile, you know, this certainty in God's love, but then there's this fear. Yeah. You know, His perfect love casts out fear. You know, so I'm like, okay, I got some work to do.
Are you telling us that your spiritual life isn't 100% perfect?
Yes.
Oh, that's a relief.
The thing that I found interesting in C, the person who was most important, probably doesn't know. I mean, I've tried to tell him, but even thinking back on the things that he did, they weren't big lectures or great acts. It was little things that took very little time, but influenced me greatly.
I wonder if that wouldn't be true of many people. Did the person you put in C, the person you had in mind, was that someone internationally recognized? Often not. It might be Martin Luther King Jr. or someone of that caliber, but often that's the case. And you say you tried to tell that person and thank them? Or
yeah, perhaps? they just...
They deflected it?
That wasn't me.
Okay.
And the quality in the person I had was that this person loved me no matter what. And even when I screwed up, even though he could be a severe disciplinarian, there was never any question who he was for, and that was me, in any circumstances.
You had a champion.
I had a champion.
Someone that saw Daniel and said, wow, this guy is great and I love him, and God loves him.
Yeah, and he bragged about me to other people when I was in the midst of some of my more serious crimes, literally. And how he could do that is not clear to me, but I would get it third hand. And I used to wonder, how in heaven's name could he say anything positive about me to anybody right now?
It's a good example of how do we feel the love of God. God is not the same as a person with skin and bone and flesh in front of us. And most people would have to say, well, an experience of God's love comes because someone loved me. Someone accepted me for who I was. It's communicated that way, not necessarily only through words, but through that lived, shared life experience. So it's good to get in touch with where we might be and to know something of our journey. Let me tell you a couple of other little devices. What I'm doing today is assuming that you all not only are in the life of being a parent and therefore in the spiritual dimension of that, but that you probably influence many others. So I'm going to give you a bag of tricks. That's a diminishing way of talking about it. I'm going to give you a number of exercises like this that you might have a reason to use sometime. This could be used if you have children old enough. That would be a fun thing to do with kids. One of the funnest things we've done with our kids is show this tape on paradigm shifts. Have you ever seen that? Oh, our kids were just the right age, and they grabbed onto that language because they were going to tell us how outdated we were. How the paradigms had all shifted, and we were still in the old one. And so we didn't get defensive, and we just let them talk, and it was great. It was one of the greatest family times that I can remember. But another one that we have used, and again, it gets us in touch with our spirituality, is called the River of Life. And that's not in your stuff. If you want to remember that, you have to write it down. And it's just you give everybody a great big sheet of newsprint, and you say your life is a river. It has flow. It has a beginning. It has a rapids with rocks and maybe a waterfall. Just kind of draw a picture. And so on this big sheet of newsprint, you know, people will start to draw a river. And this is where, you know, there's a dam in the river and the growth stopped. And you give people a whole hour. And they draw this picture and think it's their life. Well, in the early days, this is how I felt, and later on, this happened, and I met this person. And it can all be put on a sheet. Maybe a word or two, but some symbols. I've done this with my church staff. We have a staff of 9. We spent almost the whole day, because we took an hour to do it, and then it took about an hour for each one to share it, or a little less. And people found it to be so important, because here, for the first time, there was someone asking for and wanting to know about the spiritual dynamics that they had lived through. Vicki has done this with some of her work, and we had this friend who's a Catholic priest, and he wept and said, nobody's ever asked me about this before. So that's another way of getting in touch with your own spirituality and sharing with others. One that takes less time than that, here's a third idea, is the Tree of Life. And there you invite, and like I say, you can do this with your own children when they get to be the right age. There you draw a tree, and it's got branches, and then you label different parts. You label, what are the roots? What are your roots? Is ethnicity part of your roots? Is your life shaped by the fact that you had parents or grandparents immigrate from Norway or Germany or England or whatever, and they put a real ethnic stamp on how you see the world? Is that one of your roots? Maybe not. Maybe you're a 10th generation American. What are your roots? What is it that is unseen. People look at you, they can't see this about you, but it still shapes you, and it's important. And then what's the trunk? That's the public you. Everybody's got a tree trunk. You know, you look at a birch, you know it's a birch because of the trunk. Or a pine or a cedar or whatever. And then what are the leaves? What's new growth for you? That's another, that's much simpler than the river of life. This tree of life is a way that people depict visually some of the spiritual components of their life and then share. Just take a minute to illustrate this. Anybody want to tell the group right now, what is something new for you? Like new leaves that are growing on your tree, a new hobby, a new interest, a new direction your life is taking. Anybody got one of those?
Interim ministry.
That's a different need. It's a very big need in the church. Important thing to do. Get a congregation over the last pastor and ready for a new.
It's exciting.
Anybody take up knitting that has never done it?
Retirement.
Hey. Is retirement different than you thought it was when you were 20?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Sure. Tree of life. That's just another thought of how to tap into people's spirituality.
Maybe we should go one step further with and put the fruit. How are you bearing fruit? Sure. Or what's fulfilling in your life that's bearing fruit? Whether
it be fruit.
Grandparenting maybe, or a new area of service, or something like that.
If you do this with a group, and you all work with groups, I would think, you might have someone whose new leaf, new growth, is the fact that they're a grandparent raising grandchildren. There's more and more of that. There's a lot of that now, for various reasons. I have that in my own family. So these are just three different options for how to think through and talk through some of your own spiritual journey and put it out there. I'm wanting our time together to be really practical and not just theoretical. So that's why I'm putting some models out there. And depending on the age of your own children, you decide when you can maybe do this. And of course, it might be done differently with your own family than it would be if you're doing it with an adult Sunday school class or whatever. The very first page, let me just very quickly touch on that because you've got it in your hands. There's two different understandings of development. And they aren't exactly the same, answering the same question, but you've all heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And self-actualization would be that part of us that's spiritual, and we are motivated by the needs that aren't met yet. So if we are hungry, it's really hard to talk about a Bible study or our spiritual journey. We have to meet these needs in order. But a competing way of understanding development is Eric Erickson's. And that seems to indicate that at every level of development, there are spiritual issues. Trust versus mistrust. That's a pretty big spiritual issue. And autonomy versus shame or doubt, and so forth. So those are a couple models, and I might have people in here that teach psychology and know this by heart, and I'm just suggesting that the structure of how we develop from infancy into adulthood is going to be a key. It's going to help us answer how do we nurture our own children's spiritual life. Then next I give you some definitions of religion that I'm not going to spend any time with.
How about a quickie explanation on level 3, locomotor genital initiative versus guilt? That confuses me.
As you go up from...
From 1 to the 3. Locomotor, I think I understand, but
which
why
is starting
that attached to genital?
Yeah, starting to crawl around and stand up and take a few steps.
Right.
Boy, I have to go back and look at that again, what Eric Erickson had to say about why that was. And I wasn't putting that here today. I did more on that when I did this workshop with foster parents.
Okay, and what's the initiative versus guilt piece that's attached to locomotor genial?
Well, like I said, after the colon, on each of those stages, the colon, I mean, what's before the colon is Eric Erickson's terminology of the various stages of development. Right. That's the developmental theory of Erickson.
Yep.
And after the colon is some material I gathered from other reading that kind of says this is the spiritual issue at this particular stage of development.
Thank you.
Then some different definitions of religion. What I can do for us in a short time is not spend time on question 3, because that's what I'm going to do on Saturday, where we have a workshop on parenting and communication. Good stuff there, but we don't have time to work on it. But to look at question 4, what can I do right now? One of the most important things we can do is learn to say what we have to say with an I instead of a you. In other words, recording where we're at instead of saying, you should do this or you should do that. And a form of that is given here, just almost like a formula. When we need to tell somebody something that may have a negative impact, you don't say, you're always doing that. You're always causing trouble. You never go to bed. You never help your sister. You always pick a fight. The you messages are full of blame, and they are not going to help anybody's spirit. But we say instead an I message, which has 3 parts. I feel so sad when I see you take away your sister's milk, because she needs that milk, and I'd be glad to give you some milk if you want your own. It's a report of where you're at. And if you can learn, and I can learn as parents, to do that on a consistent basis, what we're doing is teaching our kids to be responsible for their own feelings, because we're showing them that we're responsible. It's not that you're bad. It's that, oh, I just am so sad about this. And maybe if we do that consistently, they're going to come to the day when they can say to us, I am really upset when you think I have to be in at 10 o'clock, because I think I'm old enough to be out later. That's a real important thing to talk through. That's much better than a kid just deciding, my mother never listens to me anyway, so I'll stay out as long as I want to. Model that. I messages. Report where you're at. Report where you're at. Report where you're at. Tell them feelings. Do you teach your kids to pray? That's the second one. That's the breath of spiritual life. And yet so many parents don't do that. We do that at our church. We do that with our confirmation program. We have an enormous confirmation program. It staggers my mind. Last year we confirmed 88 kids. And we have about that many in all 3 grades. And so what happens on Wednesday nights at our church, we have this big group fill the whole church, have a lot of commotion and music and skits and a teaching. They listen. They settle down. The teaching is only about 7 minutes. Then we break into small groups, and all over the church, on the stairways, in the narthex, all over, every available space, is a circle of kids, 6 kids and 1 adult. And what do? They pray. You know how they pray? They share highs and lows. What was the best thing this last week in your life? And what was the worst? All around. And we do this every week for 3 years. So they get real good at it. And I'm telling you, that's how you could teach your kids to pray. Even when they're real little. You put them to bed. You talk to your kids when you put them to bed, don't you? Even before they're verbal. you know, when they're pre-verbal, you have to answer too, don't you? You ask the question and you give the answer. And that teaches them language. But when you do it, put them to bed and say, what was the best thing today? As you get their jammies on and scrub up their faces and give them their bath and everything. What was the best thing today? Talk about the day. What was the worst thing today? And whatever level they're at, that's your prayer content. You say, thank you, God, for what they name as the best thing. You say, help me, God, with whatever they name as the bad thing. So your little one, you say, oh, what was the best thing, Johnny, today? And he says, oh, we had ice cream at Grandma's. And then, well, what was the worst thing? Well, Joe was mean to me. So then you say, let's pray. Oh, God, we thank you for ice cream. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And please help us when people are mean to us. Amen. Can you do that? Go like this. Everybody can do that. That is so simple. You can do that. It's not hard. It's a wonderful way to kind of put a close on the day and to let kids go to sleep, kind of releasing some of the concerns of the day. What better thing for prayer? To give them the notion that there's some divine power and strength that cares about their day. Vicki and I tried to do this with our kids. Of course, we couldn't do it every night, you know, but we were really trying to do this. And I got to tell you, it's some of the most intimate moments that we had as parents. And my son wouldn't want me to tell you this, but don't report back that I told you this. He's 24 now. When he was 18, he is the co-captain in the local football team, and he is the homecoming king and big bruiser of a guy. And still, as a high school senior, he'd say, come and tuck me into bed, Dad. Come and tuck me into bed, Mom. Because he grew up with his parents doing that year after year as a small kid. And some important things were shared. And it isn't like you have a ringer every single night, but it's just like, it's a practice. You know, you don't cook the perfect meal every time you put some slop on the table. Like, it's a practice that was so meaningful. And he would still need and want some of that.
But when, the fun thing was when it switched and I would say, come and tuck me in now. Yeah. They stayed up longer than I did. Come and tuck me in.
So I would say, for sure, teach your kids to pray. And how can you do that unless you want to do some of that too and learn with them. Learn with them. Boy, half of the stuff I know I learned because my kids challenged the heck out of me. One of the things we did that I liked so much is we had family devotions. Boy, I would really encourage you to do family devotions. For us, it was at mealtime, usually the evening meal. And I developed something called the question of the day. And if you want, you can look at that. That's the two pages before the yellow page. We put out this question and have people think about it. Just look at some of these questions. Which ones kind of turn you on? The first one, let's pretend God made a few mistakes. You know, the word pretend is because you wouldn't want to be caught in a blasphemy and claim God is making mistakes. But let's pretend that God made some mistakes when the world was made. What do you think is God's biggest mistake? Did you ever remember those old movies with George Burns, Oh God? And he said the big mistake was the avocado pit. It's too big. What do you think your kids would say in answer to that? Oh, God made mosquitoes. What was he thinking of? God made biting flies. What was she doing that day? She was distracted. You see the potential that could be? And that was pointed out to us. Another one. Which one do you like?
I have a question. question?
Yeah.
So when you have a question like this and you're going around the table and your teenager says, I don't know, how do you do that? You just say, you can pass if you want, then the teenager passes every time. Or, okay, we'll come back to you, you need to come up with an answer. Or, my teenager would not do that.
Okay, I'll tell you one little thing I know about that, but then I want others to tell us, because we understand this question, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, do we understand this question? One of the things I do is, they say, I don't know. So I say, you want to pass? And they say, yeah. And I say, oh, okay, you get two passes, two in your whole life. So if you want to use one, that's fine. And then you just go on. Just, you know, so they know, oh no, I've only got one more. And of course, you know, you may not write that down anywhere.
Yeah.
But you, that's one thing to do. So then the next time, probably you're going to say, you're going to use up your last pass?
She wouldn't believe me. She wouldn't get nasty, but she would be, well, you can't really make me come up with an answer. What are you going to do? You know, I don't really want to talk about this. I mean,
then I would,
she'll have
a
whole legal conversation with me about this.
Okay, depending on the circumstance, how many other people are listening, and whether or not you want to put it in that direction, at some point, maybe just the two of you, you could say, it seems like you don't really like this question of the day, Jess, right? No, I can't stand it. Tell me why. How could we do it better?
Well, why do we have to do it at all?
Well, it's because I kind of want to know what you think about some things. You know, if you can pursue that privately, maybe that'll help. What do the rest of you think? You're all very wise because you have kids. That's...
You could have the teenager write the questions
if
they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So she's curious.
She
what
the
you
question.
Think about
the kids selects the question.
Fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Cool.
What's your favorite rock band?
Well, they would have to be the subject.
Please.
But we did not write questions in time for dinner like this, but dinner was the talking time for our kids when they were growing up, and I still think that they competed for verbal space to tell as many stories as they could about what had happened to them that day. I don't think my husband and I got the word in inchwise. They loved to talk, and as long as they were given permission to do that, they were.
You hear so many stories, and they're so different. Somehow you had an atmosphere where that's what they wanted to do. Somehow you're talking about an atmosphere where you don't expect that this...
It depends on the mood. I mean, there are... And
sure.
She's 14.
Mm-hmm.
So there's days when, yeah, fine, and there's other days where she'll just go, I don't know. I'm just entering this new parenting thing because I've gone from having this really, you know, articulate, creative, energetic child who's now becoming a teenager, and she's just delightful sometimes, and sometimes she's, you know, not.
How many people understand?
It's just a new communication thing.
That's
having to start up.
The most important skill you need right now is endurance.
Yeah.
Just to hang in there.
Yeah.
This, you know, the form of this world is passing away. We learn this. And I don't want to belittle the anguish of it.
No,
it is
hard.
But
I would love to do this.
But anybody see a question on here that might work? Who do you know that needs a hug, number 8? I bet she must know someone who could use some encouragement.
Yeah,
I mean, that might be a question that would work.
How about number 13?
Tell me why you like it.
I'd just be really interested.
How would you answer?
Yes, yeah. How would I answer?
Yeah. Boy.
I can see what my daughter did. My 7-year-old would want to talk to God. She'd go straight to the source.
Somewhere on here, I can't see it right now. Maybe Vicki, you can find it. We had a question about if you could look into any window.
Oh. 42.
Is that it?
Is it on
there? Oh, yeah.
Do you remember, Vicki, how you answered that? And
yeah.
That really set, listen to this answer, 42.
What, which of all the windows in the world would you like to look into?
Well, I hope we're remembering the same thing. I wanted to look into the window and see my birth mother as a child. Because I had just met her probably when we were asking this kind of question. I wanted to look in the window and see her at Christmas and how Christmas was for my birth mother. I didn't know her as a mother, but I wanted to see what she was like as a child.
And that's exactly what I was remembering, because that made us all take several steps deeper for our own kids to think that their mom didn't have a childhood like they were experiencing. These are just things that I have stumbled into, but you can write better ones. And you can think of fun things, and frivolous, sometimes frivolous, but anything that is moving people to make a declaration or a statement or a reflection on what counts in life, what's important, what's valuable. Anything that kind of helps us reflect on wholeness is dealing in the area of spirituality. And I really do invite you to think about using that as a fairly regular part of your family time. And if you do it when your kids are really small and they just kind of get used to it, then when they drag their friends home and their friends are there, their friends are going to say, "Oh, your family's really different." and just take that as an award. That's a good thing.
The fun thing was that last Christmas, our daughter, who's 25, I don't know how old she is, but anyway, she brought her intended home for Christmas for 2 weeks, and she said, "Dad, you got to have a question of the day for Paul." It's a supper table. We just kind of looked at each other and burst into hilarity. "Dad, what's the question of the day?" "Yeah. I've told Paul all about this."
Here's a question for parents to think about, and if your kids are old enough, they can participate. At some point, they will. But you take a sheet of paper, and write the year, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2006, so forth. Draw it out as long as you want, and then put your name. And spouse name, and child 1, 2, 3, and if your parents are still alive, any person that's a real significant part of your immediate daily family, okay? And then put in everybody's age, okay? Okay, 2003, I'm 56, and Vicky is such and such, and all the kids. And then 2004, I'll be 57, and then I'll be 58. So forth. So you draw it all up. That's just preparatory work. You do that anytime and have that waiting. And then start to think about, what do I want to accomplish in life? What do I want to do that I don't want to miss out on? Do you want to go back to college? Do you want to go to Europe? Do you want to learn to hang glide? In the back of your mind is a notion that, boy, that would be cool. You know how those things happen, is they will happen when you plan for them. We did this and had everybody's age, including my parents, and one of the things we had in mind is that we just thought it would be so great to take my parents to Europe, because we had gone and looked up all these relatives in Norway and Denmark. We just showed up on somebody's doorstep, "We're your relatives from the U.S. and had just the most amazing time. And we thought, we're second generation. My own parents should meet these first cousins of theirs. Well, when could we do this? Well, we're not going to do it this year because that's when we've got a graduation. And we're not going to do it, And you think about that. So, with your kids, when they turn 18, circle that year. That's going to be a big year, right? And we surveyed the possibilities. How old is everybody on this? And we decided when we're going to do this. And we did it. And it wouldn't have happened if we'd have just waited until somehow we had enough money. Oh, you never, ever have enough money. Don't even ask that question. Ask when is the right time to do it. Do you want to take, if you have little kids, do you want to take them to Disney World? When would be a good year for that? How old are they
in 2006? And
what's the constellation of ages of your, when would be a good, the message is you can do virtually anything you want to do, because we live in a country of great affluence and unending opportunity, very different from much of the world. So virtually anything you want to do, you can do it, but it just takes a little planning, and this helps. What do you want your kids to experience? Would you like them to come to Holden Village? When would be a good time for that? You know, you can do lots of things. Lots of amazing things are possible. I'm just trying to decide what to throw out here because we're running out of time for that. Some of the stuff I included in the handout is going to be very self-explanatory. But when you look, I think it's page 3, where I've got the numbers. Number 1 is I message, then number 2, how to pray, teach how to pray, question of the day. Number 5, a crisis is a teachable moment. Mm-hmm. Foster parents have an abundance of it. So do all parents. Number 6, dialogue as catechesis. Tell me about the God you don't believe in. I want to know about that God. Tell me about the church you can't stand. Tell me about the Bible that's worthless. I want to hear all about that. When people answer those questions, they're not talking about God, church, or Bible. They're talking about themselves, their own journey. And you want to know that. And maybe then you'll also get a chance to give a witness about the God that you do believe in, and the church that you find important enough to be involved in. In the Bible, that can be something of a guidance for you. 7, doing faith. Actions speak louder than words. You probably won't get by preaching about social justice to your own children. Don't try. Haul them off to the Dorothy Day House and serve a meal. Bring them to a place that serves teenagers that are physically or mentally, emotionally challenged. Talk about it afterwards. That is so powerful. We have, if you've heard some of Vicky's presentations, she has this ministry called Sister Parish. And in our church, we have a group from our congregation that goes to Guatemala every year to this extremely poor community. We live in these little homes that are built from materials that they scavenge from the dump. There's a dirt floor, no running water, no electricity. Just, we have more wealth in our little suitcase than they have in their whole house. It's very important that teenagers are among that group. They have a whole new perspective. They can teach the old folks a lot of what they see, and the impact on them is enormous. So one way to access spirituality in your kids is just bring them into new experiences, and especially challenging experiences, and then ask them, what do you think of that? What do you think of that family? What do you think of that kid that lost his leg? Just ask him that. And my experience is that, especially with teenagers, you never get a real full response that's all tied up and feels great, and you think, oh, am I a good parent? You just don't get much of that. But if you get a little bit, that's better than nothing. And if you get a little bit now, and then maybe it'll come up again, because you have brought them somewhere. And we've tried to expose our kids to that kind of thing, and now what's meaningful for them when they all gather, they still all gather at home for Christmas if they can make it. And what do they want to do? They don't want to sit around and just eat all the time. They want to cook meals and bring them to people. That's what we do. And that is the most joyful kind of celebration of Christmas that we can think of, or Thanksgiving sometimes, if it's that way. So
the other thing that event orientation does is provides the opportunity for ongoing learning, because 5 years later, you'll see something and you can say to your child, remember when we did thus and so? And the kid will say, oh yeah, because he can or she can make the connection then. Even if they didn't get the whole picture when they did it, if you can call it to mind 3 or 4 years later, they'll make the connection then.
We're virtually out of time. One last idea, practical but workable. I recommend a gratitude journal. But it's not going to work if you impose it as a rule for someone else. You got to learn to do it first. That you keep a gratitude journal. What this means is that you have a tablet and you write down 5 things that I'm thankful for today. And then you do that tomorrow, and you do that for a month. And pretty soon, it changes the way you look at life. Because you go through the day thinking, oh, I got to have 5 things in my gratitude journal, and you start looking for the good. It sharpens your ability to see the blessings. And it changes things. I do that with my staff at all our church staff meetings. Every week, we say, who deserves a nice thank you note from the church staff? And we have some every week. And we have a second category, thinking of you. If we talk about a certain member of the church and somebody's got information about what's been going on, well, we write them a note and we all sign it, thinking about you. But if you do that for a while and get good at that, then you can ask your kids to do that too and share in that. To me, perhaps the best measurement, I'm saying this real loud because it's my last point, perhaps the best measurement of spiritual maturity is the level of gratitude we live with day by day. And a gratitude journal just tunes us into the blessing and goodness of life that's there, and we often miss it. Like the movie The Color Purple, where Celie says, I think it pisses God off when we just walk by a purple flower and don't even notice it. And I think, you know, God has wonderful surprises all the time. And a gratitude journal kind of makes us more aware to search for and care about that. A minute or two if you want to have a response. Anything?
I wish we could stay here for another 4 hours. I mean, I think this is great stuff.
Can you all teach your kids to pray?
Yes.
Of course you can. Can you write some good questions to add to the question of the day?
Yes.
Sure you can. And when you start to kind of keep it as an ongoing file in your mind, they'll just grow. You know, I have many more than this. I just picked out what I thought were the best ones to put on here. And the way we did it, we have them all on an individual slip of paper. And then take turns, somebody would draw out that paper, and that would be the question. And they'd have to answer it first, and then we'd go around.
I have a question, and possibly others can answer it too. Dinner time doesn't work very well for our family. My husband travels a lot, and it's just not a great time. I've just determined it doesn't work for our family. Is there another time of the day that anyone gets together that you recommend works well?
Before bedtime. Yeah, we have a kind of like we meet at a certain time at the night.
Yeah,
and then we usually read, and then after the reading, kind of incorporate something.
And try to get the whole family together.
Right, because everybody's home by the time we go to bed.
That's
I mean, at least the ages our kids are now.
And Dad could be on the phone at that time, too.
Yeah, and then sometimes when the older kids get a little older, they can read children's stories to the younger children. So it's something that you can do for a while without losing on either end.
It works better than dinner too. Even
yeah,
when we do sit down together, it just feels like there's less of a time crunch, mm-hmm. and everybody's more open at night. It's like their armor's off or something. Maybe it's just me whose armor's off.
I know some families who do it.
Maybe that's my issue too.
I know some families who only manage to pull this up once a week, and it's Sunday, the Sunday meal, noon meal. That's a lot better than nothing.
Does anyone have anything they do in the morning that works well?
That's not good for us.
Yeah, it's not right. I'm thinking we can make the day go better from the beginning.
We do little blessings before they go to school, some are way out the door, but you know, it's usually.
Take your
bat
back here.
Yeah.
I love
you. Our daughter taught us this, that what she wanted, and we were just stunned. She was 6 years old, and she walked out the door, and she started saying, I love you, to me or my wife, whoever was seeing her up, opening the door, handing her her sack lunch. We finally asked her, where did you get this idea? Well, she said, if I should die, or either of you should die, before I come home, I want those to be the last words you heard me say.
Whoa. Wow.
But I'm thinking the way you can incorporate that kind of thing is if when your kids are little, if you get on your knees and they're about to go out the door to get on the bus, you can tell them you love them, or read a poem to them if you've got enough time. It's a rush time, but you can do something with the child to reassure them that while they're gone, you're going to be loving them. That could last a long time. I think you could
That's
do that
great.
With some middle school kids, too, and still
That's
get away
beautiful.
With it.
You could kind of slip it in here and there, like notes in the lunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they used to do that, and they could still remember that. Or when I'd drive them to school, man, look at the sun on the field. Yeah, I know. Just think about it, man. Look it up there. Yeah, I know. But now, we'll go for a ride down that same road, and he'll say, Mom, look at the sun on the field. Yeah, it sort of feels like I'm being mocked, but
yeah.
It's worth it. He knows that I'm looking for the sun on the field.
Thanks for gathering. It's an important thing.